before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. First case, United States versus Ward, and it's Mr. Ratliff.
It is.
Good morning, Mr. Ratliff.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Rob Ratliff, and I'm here on behalf of the appellate, Mr. David Ward. I'd like to begin my discussion today with the application of United States Sentencing Guideline Amendment 599. Amendment 599 was given retroactive application to the guidelines when it was promulgated by the commission. Now, the instant case involves a series of multiple bank robberies. Mr. David Ward pled guilty to one count of armed bank robbery. Additionally, he pled guilty to one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm and one count of violating 18 U.S.C. 924C, possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. The parties reached an agreement and stipulated to a sentence. Mr. Ward agreed to serve 180 months on counts 1 and 2, followed by a 60-month consecutive sentence on count 3. The calculation of that sentencing range, the 180 months for counts 1 and 2, contemplated a two-level firearm enhancement pursuant to Guideline Section 2D1.1. That firearm was, under the government's position, that firearm enhancement was given for the commission of a series of other bank robberies, relevant conduct that Mr. Ward did not plead guilty to. Those other five bank robberies, he stipulated to their commission. He certainly did that, but he did not plead guilty to those other robberies.
I want to ask you something. Maybe you can help me understand this, because how is it double counting if the enhancement for brandishing a firearm was applied only in calculating the theoretical range for the bank robberies?
Well, and that's where we get to the crux of this matter, Your Honor. That theoretical range, that 180 months that the parties stipulated to, was calculated based upon the addition of those two level enhancements. Had the parties not agreed that two-level enhancement applied at the time, then the calculated guideline range would have been lower. The agreed-upon sentence would have been calculated at that lower level, and the entire sentencing structure would have been slightly lower. And when I say slightly lower, we're talking about, you know, two levels. But it would have been slightly lower.
The problem I have is he agrees to a 240-month sentence, and that's what he gets.
So I'm trying to
find where the injustice is here.
He does, Your Honor, and that is probably from this court's perspective the single most important issue here, is that he did agree pursuant to, at the time, an 11E1C plea agreement. That's since been modified, but 11E1C plea agreements, the parties stipulate to a sentence. Now, United States v. Heminger, from this court, 114F3rd 1192, basically says that a retroactive guideline amendment is not a legally sufficient basis to overturn an 11E1C plea agreement. It would seem that ends our discussion, and I need to go home. But I think Heminger is distinguishable, and albeit slightly distinguishable, but I think it's an important distinction in this case. In Heminger, the defendant agreed to a specific sentence, and that agreed sentence, as part of his plea agreement, specifically stated that it wasn't premised upon a court or the probation office's calculation of what the guideline range would be. The slight and subtle difference in this case that I think distinguishes it is in the plea agreement of this case. That plea agreement in paragraph 2 states that the parties agree to this 180-60 sentence calculation. But paragraph 4 also states that the final determination concerning the guideline range will be made after investigation by the U.S. Probation Office and the court, and that based on the factual and legal findings of the court, including the defendant's stipulations. We would suggest that's significantly different than what was set forth in Heminger. This basically created a hybrid 11E1C. While the parties had stipulated to this 180-60, I would suggest that the court still had some discretion when it came to sentencing based on paragraph 4 of the plea agreement. And I think that makes this case distinguishable. Now, the reality is certainly Mr. Ward agreed to the 11E1C, the 180-60-month sentence. But he agreed at a time when he believed that that was the appropriate way to calculate the guidelines.
That well, if you're right, and the government also agreed to that, so wouldn't the case have to go back to square one where they could be prosecuted on all the armed robbery charges that were essentially read in here?
Yes.
You can't get the benefit of a 240. I mean, hypothetically, that's a benefit, but you can't get a 240-month benefit, get out from under that, and then go back and not have that a sentence even in excess of that be a possibility.
Well, in general, Your Honor, 11E1C plea agreements are interpreted under general contract principles. It's the parties bargained for it. They either got what they bargained for, the contract is invalid. But I think we again have a hybrid contract situation where it's not just contract principles at question, but principles of due process and mistake of law and a misunderstanding and misapplication of law. The law applied in this particular case was the law that they thought should have been applied to calculate that sentence. We now know that that application was incorrect, but we have the ability to correct what was, in effect, a due process violation at the time, although nobody knew it. I believe my my first period is up, and I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ritt. Good morning, Mr. Wharton.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is James Warden. I represent the government today, as I did before the district court. There really is no dispute about the law in this case and about the meaning and interpretation of the amendment that's before the court. The dispute focuses, first of all, on whether or not that amendment has any impact under the facts here. The court's already addressed that in its colloquy with the counsel for the appellant, and I think it's very clear, as Judge Rovner asked, that there is no double counting here. It's very clear. The court has before it the pre-sentence investigation report, which was used in this case, and with respect to the counts of conviction, the one armed bank robbery, there was no enhancement for the use of the firearm accounted in the calculation of the guideline range for that robbery. Mr. Ward was convicted of a 924C violation in that case, and there was that enhancement, of course, which at that time was 5 years, but there was no guideline enhancement. The other bank robberies were stipulated to by Mr. Ward, and if the court looks both at the plea agreement memorandum and at the pre-sentence investigation report, the court sees that in those cases, of course, those were not charged robberies. There was no conviction of those robberies, but he stipulated to them, and in the plea agreement it specifically said the court will treat those as if he were convicted of them, which is important in the approach to the analysis of this issue. So when the guideline computation is done for those other robberies, since there is no 924C violation, then in looking at the appropriate guideline range, it was appropriate to give the enhancement for the use of the firearm, and in fact the brandishing of the firearm. And so I think counsel mentioned two levels, but in fact there was a five-level enhancement in each of these cases because of those firearms. Now what overrides all this clearly is that this is a C-type plea agreement, 11E1C. And as Judge Evans referenced in that that part of the issue, there was a quid pro quo here. This is a negotiated plea. And in exchange for the plea, the government dismissed the pending 924C violation with respect to the second armed bank robbery that was charged, and the government agreed not to file any of these other robberies. Had Mr. Ward been convicted only of what was charged, his sentence would have been more than 20 years more than he received, because the second 924C would have added that much time. So the case law is clear in this circuit, and in fact in every circuit, that the 11E1C plea agreement binds everyone in this case. And if the court accepts it, which they did here, we can't parse out these other issues. The government's bound by it, the defendant's bound by it, and the district court was bound by it. So an appellant can't come back now, as Judge Evans referenced, and say, well, gee, I want the benefit of this deal, but you have to lower the sentence. We would go back to square one, as the court suggested, and the impact of that would be the government could file all these other robberies, could reinstate the charges that were in this indictment, and Mr. Ward would face over 100 years of a sentence. Now, the government doesn't want that either. This case is 12 years old now, and from a practical standpoint, the United States has no interest in going back and doing that, but I respectfully suggest Mr. Ward would not be best served by that. But most importantly is this was a contract that the parties reached for which there was ample consideration given to Mr. Ward, and the guideline computation essentially was not in the open plea agreement where the court must see at the time is the sentence agreed to within the guideline range. The guideline range here was just to indicate to the court the reasonableness of the Type C plea agreement. This court has said in reported opinions that I cited that a C agreement can trump the guidelines in any case. In other words, if the parties agree to an agreement under 11E1C, if it's outside the guidelines and the court accepts it, then it's a valid sentence as long as it doesn't exceed the statutory maximum, which it didn't here. So the parties made this agreement, and it's still binding on the court. In short, Your Honors, there was no double counting here because there was no enhancement with respect to the count one of the indictment, the armed robbery, as to which Mr. Ward was actually convicted. And very importantly here, this is a C-type plea agreement as to which he was given consideration. The parties agreed to an appropriate sentence, and it's a valid sentence under the case law interpreting 11E1C, which he cannot get out from under and keep the benefit of his deal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Warden. Mr. Ratcliffe, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I briefly want to only mention to the court why we believe that there is a strong issue for the double counting in this case. The text of Amendment 599 states in two particular places, a sentence under this guideline accounts for any explosive or weapon enhancement for the underlying offense of conviction, including any such enhancement that would apply based on conduct for which the defendant is accountable under Section 1B1.3, relevant conduct. It goes on in that same line to state that you should not apply a weapon enhancement in the guidelines for the underlying offense, for example, if, and in Part B, it says, in an ongoing drug trafficking offense, the defendant possessed a firearm other than the one for which he was convicted under 924C. Our position is that these series of bank robberies is akin to either an ongoing drug conspiracy or a series of drug-related offenses. The guidelines in Amendment 599 don't specifically say series of bank robberies, and unfortunately for me, I haven't found any other cases that dealt with series of bank robberies. But we would suggest that what the guidelines are talking about here, this is in fact the same thing, that these other bank robberies are relevant conduct regardless of how they were stipulated to in the plea agreement, and the weapon enhancement should not apply for those. And that's based on strictly the text of Amendment 599. If Your Honors have nothing further, I'll give the rest of my time back to the court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.